How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick, and I'm joined by my buddy Ronald. How's it going there, man?
No, lucky on you, man. I heard you were at the game, so it must be good for you.
Yeah, we went down to the Low Veld to see us become the champs of the rugby champs. Quite a lekker little trip down there. Nice drive through Schoemanskloof. Some crazy people on the roads, though, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, the Lowveld's a lekker place. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Good people that come from there. Dwayne Vermeulen, for example.
Dwayne Thor Vermeulen, definitely. So I learned a lot about the macadamia nuts and Joubert and Seance because I took three farmers down with me on this trip. So everyone was like, you go to the Kruger with a bunch of foreign tourists and they see an impala and they get excited. Here it was in my car. Max, mangoes, Max, pecans. The most intense game of I Spy.
I actually told Linda to about your bad incidents the next day. I was like, no, when you go back, you must go down that road. And I now realize he probably knows more about your bad incidents than I do. So.
Yeah, when your message came through, we were all sitting having coffee, and Linzer looks at me. He's like, "Look, even Ronnie says we have to go here." And then he shows me your message. So yes, thank you for that one, Ronald. I did have to stop
Did
eat you bad and see and
you?
hot style. Yes,
Did you actually stop there? Did you buy some oranges?
we bought mangoes. We bought an array of macadamia nuts and every spice you can imagine. Yeah, all sorts of things, but fresh
You
off the
make
farm.
literally the best orange juice you can ever have. It's from there.
Yeah, I actually have a glass here with me at the moment from there. So yeah, it was quite lekker, but there was also some downsides to this trip and something I maybe owe Ronnie a thank you for, because genius Nick over here, my boot has one of those buttons that you push to close the boot and it lowers and it locks. And yeah, I left my key in the boot and pressed that button. Obviously, I'm on the phone to my granddad here in Hearties. How can he send the keys through to Nelspruit? I'm on the phone with Ronnie asking, do you think Audi's got a master key that they can undo this? And yeah, Ronnie sends me a locksmith, and well, it took him less than a minute to get my car open. Let's say that. And that just proves that the reason all of us still have our vehicles is because someone has not yet decided to steal them.
How did he do it? Did he put one of those inflatable bags on?
No. This was even more slick than our previous experience. So he literally had it almost looked like a credit card, but it was individual wires, like tiny, tiny wires. So he put the card against the lock slot and then he pushed wire one by one so that it went deep enough into the lock, like the serrated edge of the key would. And then he just turned it. Yeah, that look on your face, honey, that was all four of us staring at him too.
Yeah, no, I suppose you're right. The reason our cars have not been stolen is because someone's decided not to steal them yet.
Yeah, so thanks very much to Milan and Milan Locksmiths down in Nelspruit. You guys helped us out a lot. This episode quite literally brought to you by them. I might have still been down in the Low Veld had it not been for him and his credit card lockpick.
So if you find yourself in Nelspruit in need of a locksmith, call Milan Milan.
There we go. No better advertising than that, eh, Ronnie? Then what are the chances as well being down there? I had drinks with your mom and dad. I bumped into Dylan's mom. I actually got your dad to Henny's with us, Ronnie.
That's not very difficult, huh? It's always time for a beer somewhere.
Yeah, your dad's much more fun than you. We all enjoyed him much, much more. But yeah,
It's
Henny's,
fun.
my first time in a Henny's. If you drink there with your right hand, you have to down your drink and everyone starts blowing whistles and barking at you. So best you read the rules before you walk into that place, eh?
There's no way my dad would drink it down his beer. He likes to drink it slowly and enjoy it. So I'd like to have seen if he got called Buffalo.
Yeah, so I actually warned him when we went in there, and then he was very smart. He put the beer on the other side of the table. I kept moving Ashley, one of the mates that was with us, his beer back to his right-hand side, hoping he was going to pick up that 1 liter and put down it. Yeah, so no, interesting times down there, Ronnie. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of the final round of the Rugby Championship, just a couple of things to chat about the stadium, because epic stadium. Honestly, the field, the stadium itself, the people, what a lack of vibe down in Nelspruit. Two things though, Ronnie. Beer tent, there was definitely not enough seating for a stadium of that capacity. I mean, we got there just after 12. The gates hadn't even been open an hour and there was not one seat left in the beer tent. So definitely a work on. And then the park and ride. I saw a lot of people commenting on there, Imbombela is the new Ellis Park. And let me tell you, in terms of the park and ride, that's at least true. And every other facet in Bombela kicks Ellis Park's ass. The park and ride was an absolute shit show.
Yeah, look, I think the people aren't very used to having too many events there. So, yeah, it's probably new to them. Yeah, I mean, these stadiums should just hire us and we'll do proper reviews of every stadium every year.
Absolutely. And honestly, the two things that I have to complain about that stadium are easy fixes with a bit of planning and crowd control, you know. So otherwise, absolutely loved it down there. We were sitting in the stand and we were sort of on the 10-meter line behind the tunnel. And the whole stand open next to us, there was not one person sitting there, maybe 100, 120 seats open. And just before kickoff, I was like, well, I'm going to go stand down there and film. And then still no one came as the game kicked off. So I looked up to everyone. I was like, come join us here. So we had the front row behind the tunnel, Ronnie.
My parents, each
of us.
Yeah, my parents said it's the best seats they've ever had at any rugby match.
It was unbelievable. We literally got the luckiest you could have. A whole stand open next to us to go across and sit in.
Nice. Well, lucky you.
Then the last thing, Ronnie. Well, actually, you need to maybe explain to this to us, because is this a low-felt thing, this nonsense that happened this weekend? So, you know, you've been to the game. It's been a long day out with a couple of beers. You've been in the stadium, now you come out, yes, hunger. You want something to eat when you get out of that stadium. So what do? We go to the footlong Boerewors stand. You know what they bloody served us? A footlong Boerewors, but with shredded chicken sprinkled over the top. What is that, Ronald? Honestly.
I see no problem. Isn't it all Boerewors roll that they get sprinkled with shredded chicken?
I don't know if you're joking now or you've just been raised in the low felt, but when I took a bite of that expecting it to be onion, and realized I had shredded chicken all over the top of my burrito roll.
No, you know what happened? It's end of the night. The people have extra chicken. They need to get rid of it. So they sprinkled it over the Boerewors roll. Smart. We don't waste in the low felt.
That definitely answers my question then. Definitely a weird place, eh, Ronald? So we all have seen these videos, and there's some hilarious memes doing the round about all these streakers that went onto the pitch, right? And people have varying accounts. The video I put out has had a lot of views, with some people trying to spread rumors on there that the guy is dead or in a coma. It's been clarified he was released from the stadium and even asking for his beer in the medic tent already. So man's all right. Man got owned on the pitch. But I think the one thing that needs to be said here, as funny as it is watching this happen, it was disruptive of the speeches and the medal ceremony. But more than that, these Oaks invading the pitch are going to fuck it up for everybody else, because it's Oaks doing that got the fences put up at Loftus that we all hate having shut up 10 minutes before the end of the game. It's exactly that. Just respect the rules. Don't fuck it up for everyone else. Don't run on the pitch. They let you on afterwards anyway to go and meet the players. Just wait your turn.
Yeah. Well, look, I think, yeah, I don't really know what to say with that. I'd also be a little bit disappointed if people stuffed up things for me, like you say, with Loftus, when they put those fences up and suddenly it's obstructing your view if you've got the nice seats at the edge of the field. But I can't help but think it's just because we're older, you know, and we were 20-something, we would have got behind that quite a bit. So we're not that age anymore, so we don't find it as funny as we used to.
Yeah, I think another point that I saw made in the comment section on our page that was quite valid is, you know, someone said, why the hell did security have to go so hectically on these guys? But in the same breath, you don't know what that guy's jumping on the field to do. Yeah, some of them are honestly just on there because they've had a few beers and want to have a run. But how do you differentiate them for someone that's running on there to go and cause some real shit?
But have you looked at like a range of those videos, and that one Oak that did all the tackling? You know, the one that knocked the guy up, but he also tackled another person and tackled a third one. That's one of the brilliant memes I saw. Was everyone's trying to find out what if that guy's okay, the guy that got knocked out. Meanwhile, I'm here wondering whether Rassie Erasmus has offered this Oak a new contract to play for the Springboks. So it made the tackles.
The next penis test the toy.
His form was outstanding, you know.
No, definitely. Good tackle technique from the man. But Ronnie, let's then get on to the rugby championship. So final round. It must have been something for the Kiwis to go through, hey, not being in the contest in the last round. They weren't up for any silverware, but they took on the Wallabies at home in Wellington, a ground they haven't had success on for 6 years. They last played the Wallabies there in 2020, and there was a draw in the fixture. But yeah, they walked out victorious here, Ronnie, 33 points to 13 in Sam Kane's 100th test. What did you make of this one?
Yeah, I think the curse has been broken, and I think the All Blacks will never play in Wellington again. Now that they finally won there, they'll be moving on and letting all the round sports play out there, but never again rugby. Yeah, well done to Sam Kane, 100 test matches. He's been there, what, since 2012? I saw today a comparison or a meme of, you know, the team that played when Sam Kane made his debut in 2012. And there's some big names there, one or two players that I'd forgotten about. So, yeah, good on Sam Kane. He's been there, he's been through ups, and he's been through some serious downs. I don't think many international players can say they've been down and out like Sam Kane has, you know, broken neck, you know, what happened in the final last year, you know, Irish test series on home soil. So the man's been through it, and yeah, well done to him.
Yeah, great to see him achieving that milestone for sure, Ronnie. So 19-13 lead to the All Blacks at the break, courtesy of a Caleb Clark try. He did score two of them on the day, but yo, the Wallabies kicked that first half off with hectic intensity.
Yeah, and it's good to see from the Wallabies though, right? They had their periods of brilliance, and you know they were in it for quite a while, but unfortunately it did fizzle out towards the end. They weren't able to hold on to it, and then what we know the All Blacks for, which hasn't been the case for the last five test matches, you know, they piled on the pressure towards the latter end of the game.
Yeah, so they finally broke that hoodoo of theirs of not scoring in the last 20 minutes of any rugby championship fixture, because they managed to turn the tempo up quite a bit at the end there. Caleb Clark definitely returning to form, so he got the two tries, as I mentioned, also picking up a yellow card in the dying stages of the game. Ronnie, what do you make of this stat though? And this is one that surprised me researching for this episode. The Wallabies haven't won a test in New Zealand since 2001. I wasn't even...
I'm not so... What did you say? You weren't even born then. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'm turning 21 now.
Sure, you had your bloody 21st back then in 2001. Yeah, they haven't won. But it's not surprising, honestly. You know, when you find out how long the All Blacks have held the Bledisloe. Yeah, look, it is unfortunate. The All Blacks have just been so dominant, and the Wallabies have just never been dominant enough to pip the All Blacks, even when the All Blacks were a little bit down and out, like they are recently. You know, it's the All Blacks got a little have been struggling a bit of late, but the Wallabies have been struggling a lot more. I mean, what are they, 10th on the log? I don't even know today. It's unfortunate, because 10 years ago, the Wallabies were third on the log. So they've really fallen from grace a bit.
Yeah, look, I mean, we have to see and give Joe Schmidt some credit. He is starting to piece it together. He's starting basically from scratch with a very, very young team. The Wallabies loose trio has really impressed me in what they've managed to string together. And now it's just hoping, you know, they get some experience now in November, regroup for a season of Super Rugby, and then that they can come together hard for the Lions series.
Before you move on and say anything, so Tazana hasn't played, you know, he's played, what, two or three matches in this championship. Tazano, and he's got the offensive tackles, the most dominant tackles in the competition.
Yeah.
You know, for a player that hasn't even played all the matches, he's beaten the likes of Peter Steph Toy and some other workhorses around the competition. So, Joe Smith got some bloody good players there to work with. So, yeah, let's watch his space and hope for the best.
Yeah, you just need to see them stringing together those 80-minute performances now. Ronnie, you know, we take a look here. Will Jordan had a massive game at 15 for the All Blacks. He was everywhere, really showing his class. And I know when we had Dan on the show a few weeks ago, he was talking about wanting Will Jordan at 15. So this reopens the debate then that we've had a number of times. DMAC or Beauden Barrett at 10?
Beauden Barrett.
Yeah. Ronnie, what's going on there, hey?
No, well, why are you surprised? I'm very consistent in my responses. Beauden Barrett is 10 over DMAC any day.
Your consistency in supporting Beauden Barrett is like your consistency in supporting the Sharks.
No. Richie Moonga 10 over Beauden Barrett. Beauden Barrett at 10 over DMAC. I like DMAC a lot, but he just doesn't seem to fit into that back line very well. And, you know, often, and we've seen this with Rusty now, and the whole reason why I like Richie Moonga at 10 is because it fits that game plan. The All Blacks just seem to do so much better with Monga there, and you know, also with Bowden Barrett there, than they do with DMAC. And sometimes it's not about having the best player, it's about having the best team player.
True, true. And it's going to be very interesting to see if Razor chases down bringing Richie Monga back to New Zealand to get him back into the setup. I think that's a fulcrum he relied on heavily at the Crusaders as well. So I'm curious to see how that one goes. This is obviously the last home test for both Sam Kane and TJ Perenara. They're off to play in Japan next year, so they won't be eligible for the All Blacks and likely will finish out their career on the November tour should they be selected.
What about Aaron Cruden? I watched Aaron Cruden play some club rugby this past weekend. We've forgotten about him. He fell way out of favour with the All Blacks.
Yeah, well, being overseas, and you're also remembering guys like Lima Supuaga, you know, that were in the setup, Josh Iwani, also now out of it. So a lot of young talent there that's applying its trade overseas and ineligible for selection at the moment. Ronnie, let's go over then to the big one for the weekend, the Boca 48-7 win over Los Pumas in Nelspruit. Imbombela sees Eben Etzebeth become the most capped Springbok of all time too, 128 test caps at the age of 32.
You know, I'm not, when it comes to rugby, I'm not really jealous of you that all that much, Nick, because, you know, we were both there together when we watched the final last year, and that was amazing. We've seen some pretty epic test matches over the years, but two test matches this year that I'm incredibly jealous of is our winning over in Cape Town that you were at, and this one at Mbombela to watch Eben Etzebeth get 128 test caps. I think you're very fortunate that you were able to witness that.
Yeah, I definitely, definitely am fortunate. You know, when I was standing there, Ronnie, it dawned on me. You and me were at Eben's 100th test as well in Cape Town against Wales.
Yeah.
That was our first in Greenpoint.
When I saw the fireworks with his name written in fire, I thought, hang on, I've seen this one before. They probably just reused that same bloody structure. But you're right. We were there watching Wales. And crazy. that was a proper anthem that day as well. I remember that was an
intense day in the stands, that's for sure. But all credit to the crowd here at Imbombela. It, for me, Ronnie, was the most active and vibey crowd I've ever experienced in a home stadium, by far. They were vocal right through the game, carrying ole ole, shoshaloza, boca, boca. It was epic.
Yeah, well, that's the low falders for you. It's literally the best people on the world then. In the world. So, you know, you can count on the Lowfelders to bring their kias because, yeah, we're just so awesome.
Very easy to do when one thing happens there every 3 years, hey? All get up.
Funny.
Yeah, Ronnie. So let's just dissect this game a little bit here. So the Boca have now got 8 wins out of 10 tests. We've dropped one against Ireland and one against Los Pumas. Unfortunate losses. But the most impressive thing for me is that Rassi has used 49 players so far this season.
Mm. Yeah, I saw that today as well. That's very impressive. Firstly, I just want to say thanks to our coach for bloody always sending messages on Twitter. I really enjoy that. But when he now said 49 players used this season in over 10 test matches, that's 4.9. Oh, I don't know. That's a ridiculous stat. But yeah, 49 players over 10 test matches is fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. And you know what the craziest part is, Ronnie? It doesn't really feel like it. I mean, it doesn't feel like we've had these very inexperienced teams on display. He's blended it perfectly.
Yeah. No, I think so too. When we look at our 10s and how 10s were rotated, Marty got his 2 test matches at the end. Sasha got 4 and Polly got he was either on the bench or starting for all of them. I thought the rotation at 9 was very good. I thought that Lucanio reintroduced to the box side, maybe didn't do so well last week at 12, but we had good combinations at centers. I would have liked to have seen Andre Esterhazen, but Rassi did, his rotation was fantastic, honestly, and I can't tell you what our strongest side looks like.
Yeah, it's like Rassi says, the only time he ever picks a strongest team is for a World Cup final. So there's the point he's making. And you know, just to touch on Tony Brown's influence with the Boca, because if you look at the stats, people might say we look disjointed at times and whatnot, but if you look at the stats, the Springboks have transitioned quite nicely to a running game because we topped the table for points scored, 188, Ronnie, topped the table for tries scored with 24. Meters made, 3,053. carries 730, and 50 line breaks. All of those stats were the Springboks at the top of the list.
Yeah, very impressive. And you know, it's one thing for the attack, but it's also these funny trick plays that we're seeing Tony Brown. I mean, we saw it last week or whenever it was with a sort of then with Kobus Reinach doing a bicycle kick over the, you know, backwards. And in the lineouts, we saw that very strange move. I don't know if that's all Tony, but it's fantastic to see that the Hawks are trying to innovate. They're trying to cause a bit of confusion and they're trying to capitalize on that confusion. And it's entertaining. No one. I haven't actually watched the breakdown this week, but I'd love to see John Kerwin, Sir John Kerwin and the likes say that the box are not entertaining at the moment because, look, you just mentioned it, all those attacking stats and then obviously the innovation that's taking place. It's good to see.
Yeah, you know, in Chasing the Sun 3, we're going to see an episode of Rassie Erasmus at the field here outside Four Ways High School where he says to Peter Steph, you're going to go up, you're going to catch the ball, and you're going to throw it forward to Eben. Still in the lineout, coach. Still in the lineout, Peter Steph. And I knew this. We were going to need this against England in the semi-final.
The move 2.0.
So, no, I love the innovation. Love that the boys seem to be having fun as well. But I think my favorite stat out of all of them, Ronnie, is that we had 33 scrums won in this competition, 15 of those generating us a penalty. So the box scrum and physicality still on par with this new running style that we're implementing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it must have sucked this past weekend to be an Argentinian front rower because the box were dominant. Ox was having a feel. Ox was basically, I don't know how to explain it. It was just child's play for him.
Yeah, Ox was having fun. There was actually a really funny meme. You know, the scuffle at the end of the game? Everyone's holding each other by the collar and whatnot. And there's someone took that photo and commented underneath it. Nothing to see here. Just another Puma scrum going backwards. The image fit it perfectly. But yeah, no, good performance for them. But, you know, we're giving the Los Pumas a lot of grief here, but some really great stuff from them. You know, they've in this season so far beaten South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, and France. And they're only halfway through. So, you know, very, very good stuff. Felipe Contempomi clearly bringing something to the side that's got them going, got them firing. Also some experience mingled in with some youngsters. And I'm really keen to see where these guys can go as they get a bit more experience and start to build on the ability to back games up week after week. You know, a lot of potential there.
Not just that, I believe Argentina's got Ireland lined up at the end of year tour, though. So they've got an opportunity to take another team out of the top five and beat them. So I'm going to be supporting them, and I think they can do it.
Hell yes, we'll be supporting them for that one, Ronnie. That's for damn sure. Then going into this game, Los Pumas had the best discipline record in the competition. They had not received one card yet. I saw Thomas Lavanini named on the team sheet, and I was like, well, here we go. Thomas, I must apologize. You did not get a card in this test, but your teammate surely made up for it. Two yellows and a red in this game.
Well, I suppose the one yellow did eventually become a red, right? So, but still very, very poor from them, especially from one of the leaders of the group just coming off the bench and then immediately getting sent off. So yeah, that was a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Los Pumas were already missing Marcus Kremer with an injury. He was gigantic against the box a week earlier. And then to lose Pablo Matera to a card like that, you know, he's another leader, like you said, in that loose trio, really, really hurt them and cut down their ability to slow the box pack down, especially those last 20 minutes where we really got into our strides. Ronnie, you know, Marnie Lubbock, we were slating the poor guy, and so was everybody on social media. Comes out, Rassie makes Jaden kick. Jaden slots a few, misses a few, but Marnie can now play Marnie's game. And listen, did he not shut everybody up?
Yes and no. Look, I think I'll give you my opinion. I always knew that Marnie's a fantastic attacking fly-off. I mean, he's an exciting 10, and we saw in the game how well that ball found its way to the wings, and it just looks so natural and it just looks so good. I was very happy for him to do that. And he definitely, I'm sure that, you know, if the team didn't help him get over, build a bit of confidence in the week, that game definitely did, and well deserved. The problem is, he still can't kick. So we have to get another person to kick. We have to get a nine, like a Jaden or somebody else or a that can kick in place of Marnie. So that's a selection decision that needs to be made every time. Right, who's our kicker? Who's our 10? If it's Pollard, cool, then we move on. If it's Marnie, cool. Who's going to kick for us? It's the immediate next question.
Yeah, I think Marnie with a Sasha at 15 might be the go-to combination in some games where you really want to play an attacking structure. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting to watch as it develops over the next 3 years. But you definitely can't go screaming about discarding Marnie when you see a man float a rugby ball like that. And those cross kicks were pinpoint. You know, it really was a masterclass of attacking play from him at 10 this weekend.
It's unbelievable when you watch him kick off the side of his boot like that. It just pays off, you know, chairs and steps on the wing. It's a work of art, it's a piece of art.
It really is. Hang it in the Louvre. Ronnie, now this is a contentious issue because some people would bite my head off for even bringing this up, but Colby versus Peter Steph Tatoy, how do you pick which one's having a better season for the Boca at the moment?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, though. I personally would favor Peter Steph Tatoy, but I would not complain one bit if Colby got it. So, but the reality of the situation is I don't think either of them will actually win it. I think
it's going to go to
I'm being so negative here, but yeah, I don't know if World Rugby will back either Peter Steph or Colby.
Yeah, well, they have to be in the reckoning for it with DuPont never touring with the French. I don't know how he's been called the best player in the world, but be that as
it is, sorry,
two players really.
I just want to interrupt you there. You know, I would add a third Springbok player as contention for World Ox. Player of the Year, and that's Ox. How did you know I was going to say Ox?
Because he's top class. He's having 100.
The props don't get the recognition they deserve it, but Ox Blood deserves it.
Could Ox be the first front rower ever to win World Player of the Year?
Has a prop never won it?
Never, not once.
No Castro Giovanni, no Adam Jones, no, nothing.
Nothing. Maybe Ox is going to do it for us, eh?
Ox, come on, we've got to back Ox.
And we have to have a public holiday here where we all go and eat some cake because, damn, man.
Ox Day. Oxing Day.
Yeah, Ronnie, so that wraps up a lot of really good action in the Rugby Championship. Honestly love this tournament and the teams that we play in it. Massive respect to everyone. Really great to see the Boca lifting the trophy as well for the first time since 2019. First time I've seen them lift it as well, so that was really lekker. And yeah, well done to every single player and coach involved in that shot for bringing it home. Ronnie, then just quickly to touch on the URC, the South African teams were back in action this weekend. And the ever-consistent Sharks giving up a 27-3 point lead, going down to Connacht away, 36-30. Very frustrating game.
Yeah, I don't really... Look, it was still a good game, though. Letting that lead slip, though, that's unfortunate. But, you know, it was still a good game. So a lot of promise. I actually don't know if I can say this. It's not the first game of the season. We've just come out of a Currie Cup win.
Then Ospreys got a 37-24 point win over the Stormers. Also away, Stormers continuing their poor record on the road. Whilst the Bulls at home got a 22-16 point win over Edinburgh. And the Lions just across the Yuxgay getting a 35-22 point win over Ulster, which was a good one. But maybe
nice to see the Lions win.
Maybe shout out for the weekend there goes to Zebra for beating Munster. That was the most unexpected one on everybody's Super Brew this weekend.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, Ronnie and I are going to be taking a bit of
hiatus.
Hiatus. There we go. Let's use that word. So we're just going to take a bit of a break. It's been a lot covering all the rugby. We'll be back on the 6th of November with an all-new episode leading up to the test against Scotland as the Boca get ready to tackle the North. But shot for joining us, everyone. And then just to end off the episode, the May Fokchom moment of the week can go nowhere else but to Eben Etzebeth on his 128th cap, most cap Springbok of all time, and the Boca lifting the Rugby Championship at home. Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. May Fokchom, dit was lekker.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform
so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.